Welcome to Hebrew Club at Concordia Seminary. I'm Professor Tom Egger, pinch-hitting again for Tim Seleska, who is probably off on some tropical island sunning himself and drinking drinks with little umbrellas in them, as he usually does for most of the summertime. We are in 1 Samuel 28. And last week we had read up to verse, I believe, through verse 20. So our first verse to pick up on is verse 21. The text here in 1 Samuel 28 is Saul's visit to the witch at Endor. He's become very desperate. He has a sense that Yahweh has departed from him. The Philistines are pressing him hard and things are looking fairly hopeless. He's not sure what to do. He becomes so desperate that he longs for a divine word, but the prophets are silent. The prophet Samuel is dead, and so he decides to try to find a medium or a spiritist who can conjure up for him Samuel so that he can hear a word of Yahweh from Samuel. This is, of course, against Yahweh's express prohibition of using these mediums, and Saul himself has been Yahweh's instrument to banish the mediums from the land, so it's hard to find one, but they find one at Endor, and they go to this medium. She consults, causes to come up Samuel, and the message that he gets, the message that Saul gets from Samuel is less than the helpful message he was hoping for. Samuel comes back from the dead to tell Saul, Saul, you really are finished, just like I said before, just like Yahweh said before, and today is the day, referring to tomorrow. In fact, back here in middle of verse 19, he says, U'machar atah u'vaneka imi. And tomorrow you and your sons will be imi, with me, in other words, among the dead. Also, he says, the verse continues there in 19, also the army of Israel, or the camp of Israel, Yahweh has given into the hand of the Philistines. And Saul's reaction, va yemaher Shaul, va yipol, lo komato artsa. And Saul hurried up and fell. Immediately he fell lengthwise, his full stature, to the ground, and he feared Maod greatly, on account of the Divrei Shemuel, on account of these words of Samuel. Gam koach lo hayavo, and strength there was not in him. Why? Ki, because lo akal lechem kol hayom v'kol halayla. So Saul is fearing greatly, and he's also probably shaking and weak because he hasn't eaten food all that day and all night. Brings us to verse 21, and now you can see the first verb there with ha'isha as the subject is feminine, and so now all of a sudden the focus shifts from Saul to this woman's reaction. This is the medium of Endor, the witch of Endor, who is responding now to Saul. Vatavo ha'isha el Sha'ul, and the woman came to Saul, Vatera ki nivhal ma'od, and she saw, third hey verb with the hey gone there from ra'ah, and she saw, and after a verb of speaking or perceiving, ki usually gives the object of what is seen or thought or said, so here's that, and she saw that he was terrified greatly. This is a nithal perfect from Bahal. Means in the Nithal to be terrified, and Ma'od is the adverb there. She saw that he was terrified greatly. Va'tomer elav hine shama'a shifkataka b'kolaka. And she said to him, behold, your maidservant, shifka is maidservant, your maidservant listened, a third feminine singular perfect there from shama'a, your maidservant listened, or with the b marking the object, probably obeyed. Behold, your maidservant obeyed your kolaka, your voice. Va asim nashi bakapi. And I set, I suppose, from the verb seem there, first person imperfect, and I set my nephesh in my kaf, in my palm, in my hand. This is an idiom in the Old Testament. It occurs also in Judges 12:3 and in Psalm 119:109. And the idiom is to take one's life into one's hand. Now, this isn't hard for us to understand because we use the same idiom in English. When you take your life into your hand, you're risking your life. And probably this is one of the many figures of speech in English that have come to us from biblical language. So even though we don't have a lot of cognate vocabulary from Hebrew and English that helps us learn Hebrew, we do know many of their figures of speech because of the influence of the Bible on English. So, behold, she says, your maidservant obeyed your voice, and I took my nephesh, my life, into my hand, va'eshma et devareka asher debarta eli, and I listened to the work to your words which you spoke to me. But turnabout is fair play. So verse 22, va'ata, and now shemana gam ata bekol shifkateka. And now, the imperative form of Shema, and now listen, please, also you, or likewise you, to the voice of your maidservant, or obey also you, the voice of your maidservant. Now a simple vav plus imperfect, v'asima, a simple vav plus the imperfect after an imperative oftentimes has a sense of intended result of the imperative or the rationale of the imperative. So, listen to my voice, she's saying, in order that I may set, lifneka, before you, pot lechem, a morsel of bread, v'akol, and eat, v'hi, v'ka, koak, and eat, and again a simple vav plus an imperfect here, and eat in order that there may be in you koach, strength. Ki telek ba darek. When, here ki marks a temporal phrase, in order that there may be strength in you, when you go, notice the second person masculine singular imperfect of halak there, when you go on the way. So that you can be strengthened when you travel. Any questions on verses 21 or 22 there? All right. Moving on to verse 23. 1 Samuel 28, verse 23. Thank you. We have a couple of interesting verb forms here towards the beginning of verse 23. Vayama'ein vayomer lo o call. And he refused. What conjugation is this of the verb ma'an here? It's a little tricky. It's actually a PL imperfect. And you don't have the dagesh because it's a middle guttural, so it lengthens that preceding vowel. So a irregular PL imperfect. And he refused. And he said, I will not eat. And another interesting imperfect form here, o call. You might think participle at first, but that would be o kale with a tsere. O call has a double duty aleph there, where the aleph performative kind of sucks together with or quiesces with, assimilates with the aleph of the root. So Saul refuses. He says, I will not eat. And then Saul's pretty determined here, it seems, but never determined for long. One of the great ironies of Saul's depiction in Samuel is how he's always captive to the voices of those around him. And you saw how the narrative has been emphasizing that. The woman says, behold, I listen to your voice, now you listen to my voice, and Saul refuses. He says, I will not eat. But the verse continues, Vayif ratzu vo Avadav, Vagam, Isha, and they perezed upon him. Perez, or peraz, the root, usually means to break out or to burst forth. But with a b marking its object, it can mean something like press upon or urge. In other words, to urge strongly or to persuade strongly. And they urged him, and now you get the subject, his servants, and his subjects urged him, and also the woman. So she's added to the action of the verb there. She also urged him, with the result that, Vayishma lekolam, and he listened to their call, their voice. Vayakam me ha'aretz, Vayeshev el hamita. And he arose from kum, hollow root, and he arose from the Eretz. Do you remember why he was on the Eretz? Because of fear at the words of Samuel, right? Immediately upon hearing the damning words of Samuel that Yahweh has taken the kingdom from him and given it to David, his companion, he fell to the ground and was terrified. But with just a little urging from his comrades and from the woman, he decides, I'll get up from the earth. And he sat upon the bed. Here you have to remember your irregular call imperfect rules to determine that this is yeshav rather than shuv, right? You can tell it's a first yod verb because of the tsere under the yod, vayeshev. Shuv would be vayashav with comments. Any questions on 23? All right, verse 24. Vela isha egel marbeik bavayet va tamaher va tiz ba kehu kehu va tikak kemak va talash va tofehu matzot. Okay, lots of feminine verbs here. And to the isha was an egel marbeik. This is a construction of possession here. Belonging to the woman was a calf, a fattened one. Actually, this isn't an adjective. This is a construct, egel marbeik. And both are nouns. Marbeik is a noun, kind of a verbal noun meaning fattening or fatten. So you would describe this as an attributive genitive here. It's a calf of fattening, meaning a fattened calf. And it belongs to the woman. In English, we would just say she had. So, and the woman had a fattened calf in the house, and she mahered, and she zavakt it. Notice the ehu ending there above the atnak, the object suffix. What's the root there? Yeah, to sacrifice, zavak, from mitzvayach, an altar. It comes from the same word. So, and she mahard, and she sacrificed it. We had mahar up earlier. It's oftentimes an adverb verb. It's used here with just two finite verbs, and she hurried, and she sacrificed, but the sense is kind of used together in Hebrew to mean, and she. And immediately she sacrificed. That first verb ends up acting kind of like an adverb. And immediately she sacrificed it. And she took from lakak, the lamed acts like a first nun, assimilates into the kof there. And she took kemak, flour. And she, here the root is losh, the hollow root losh, which means to knead, as in K-N-E-A-D, like you would knead dough. And she kneaded, you would supply the object, it. Va tofehu matzot. Matzot is the plural of matzah, which is easy to remember. It's matzah bread, like Jewish people still use in their Seder suppers, unleavened bread. And here it's plural, so unleavened bread loaves, you would say. But what is this verb that precedes it? Va tofehu. Has the ehu on the end, which is an object suffix, it. And it has the vav, consecutive vav, and the imperfect preformative tav, because it's a feminine verb. But what's the root? All you have left of the root here is the pe. Oftentimes, first nun verbs with the third hey will do this, disappear all except for one letter. But then you have a dagesh usually in the letter that remains. This is actually a kind of an unusual kind of forming up of a first aleph verb, first aleph root. So the root is what then? Afa. And it means to bake. And it's one of the five first aleph verbs that tend to take a holam after the performative when they form up. That's why you get here va-to-fehu. Va-to-fehu. Bartelt has an interesting little mnemonic device that he gives you in his Hebrew text. It goes like this. I said I am willing to eat what you bake, though I perish. I said I am willing to eat what you bake, though I perish. And it uses all five of these Hebrew verbs that are first aleph and take a holam after the performative. I said, amar, I am willing, ava, to eat, akal, what you bake, that's the verb we have here, afa, though I perish, which is first aleph, azad.
Avad.
But this is a tricky form, and she baked it, and she baked it, matzot. Now, what do you do with matzot here grammatically? Because you've already had an object for the verb bake. It's right on the verb ehu, and she baked it, matzot, unleavened bread loaves. She baked it. What's the it refer to? What's the antecedent of ehu here?
The flour.
The flour, the kemach. So what do you do then if you've already had a direct object with matzot? This is another example. We mentioned this last week. You have a noun sitting there. It's not the subject. It's not the direct object. And it's not the object of a preposition. What do you do with it? It's probably an adverbial accusative of some kind. And there's, if you look in a grammar, a whole listing of different options for different uses of the adverbial accusative. This is probably an adverbial accusative of product. You make X into Y, and this is the Y here. And so she baked it into unleavened bread loaves. Questions on verse 24. All right, 25. Vatagesh, this is the hithil of Nagash, means to bring something near. Nagash in the call would be to come near, and in the hithil to bring, cause something else to come near, to bring something near. And she brought near, you have to supply the object, it, lifne Shaul v'lifne avadav, before Saul and before his servants, v'yokelu, and they ate. V'yakumu v'yeliku b'layla hahu. And they got up and they went from Halak, and then a temporal bait here, during that night, or on that night. On the night, the that one. Any questions then on that? Pretty straightforward. Alright, theologically, this chapter raises all kinds of questions, and have been rich discussions about how do we take this appearance of Samuel coming forth from the dead and actually speaking the word of Yahweh to Saul. Was this really Samuel? Did Samuel really come forth from the dead? Was this something that God allowed? Was it a demonic deception? Because after all, you're not supposed to consult mediums. Would God really dignify the medium of a medium by having one of his true prophets speak a true word? And yet, it does seem to be a true word of Yahweh, and it is going to be fulfilled in the Prickpi. So the reformers have discussed this at length. There's a really interesting, if you'd like to look at this in a little bit of depth, Kyle and Dalich have a five-page or six-page discussion on this pericope from 1 Samuel 28 in their commentary on Samuel, and it's worth reading. It's interesting to see how conservative biblical scholars have really sort of shifted their position on this. At the time of the Reformation, Luther was pretty uncomfortable saying this was a true word from God, and so was Calvin. But exegetically and for narrative reasons and theological reasons, conservative scholars are much more apt these days to say, oh, this really is Samuel coming, sent by Yahweh, in spite of the bad choice of a way to bring him up to speak this word of condemnation to Saul. The fine points of that I'll leave for Kyle and Dalich if you're interested. Well, we can read a few verses into chapter 29 here. The scene shifts. They've gone away, and it resumes with the scene the next day. Why was Saul there with the witch of Endor? Because of the pressure of the Philistines, and now the Philistines come into view. By Yikbutsu Philistim et Kol Hamakanehem et Phekah. And they gathered, just the call of Kavats, and they gathered, the Philistines did. Notice there's no definite article on Philistines there, but by nature it's definite. And Philistines, or the Philistines, gathered, direct object, all their armies, it's plural there with that type 2 suffix, all their armies or camps to Aphek. Notice the directive hey on the end of Aphek there. And the Philistines gathered all their armies to Aphek. And as for Israel, notice the disjunctive vav there, vav plus a non-verb. It's used here to simply shift the subject. And as for Israel, Israel, konim. This is a call participle of a third hey verb, kana is to camp. And Israel was camping, ba'ayin, asher, ba'yizrael. At the spring, ayin can either mean eye, like your eyeball, or a spring of water. And Israel was camping at the spring, which was at Jezreel. The Sarnay, Philistim, Overim, Lemaot, Vela, Alafim. And the word here is Saron, and it's plural. It means prince or lord, but it is distinctive to the Philistines. So if you do a search of this, it occurs a number of times through the narratives of the Old Testament, but it's always the Sarnay Philistim. So it must be some distinct word for a commander in their armies. And the lords of the Philistines were passing. Notice the disjunctive vav that begins this verse and the way that the participle oftentimes is used to give background information like this. And the lords of the Philistines were passing by lema'ot v'le'alafim, by hundreds and by thousands. The lamed here, this is sometimes called what's the word for this kind of a lamed? A normative lamed. And it expresses kind of a measurement. They're passing by in hundreds and in thousands, or by hundreds and by thousands. The David, another disjunctive of, and David, the Anashav, and his men, Overim, were passing by, Va'akaronah im Akish. This is a spatial bait here. They were passing by at the last, or at the behind. Acheron means last or final. So they were passing by at the last, in other words, at the end of the line of the procession of the Philistines, him, Achish. Remember who Achish is from this narrative? He's the king of Gath that David has found himself kind of allied with. So here comes all the Philistines at the very end. Here's David along with Achish and his troops. Any questions on the grammar here? Vayomaru Sarei Philistim. Now the commanders of the Philistines are just called the more normal word Sarei, commanders or princes. And the princes of the Philistines said, Ma ha Ivrim ha Ela. What the Hebrews, these ones. What these Hebrews? In other words, what are these guys doing here? What's up with these Hebrews? In other words, we're the Philistines, and we're fighting the Hebrews, and there's a bunch of Hebrews at the end of our ranks. Vayomer Achish el Sarei Philistim, and Achish said to the princes of the Philistines, Hello ze David Eved Shaul Melech Yisrael, has not this David, the servant of Saul the king of Israel, Asher Haya Iti, who has been with me, Ze Zamim, or sorry, Ze Yamim, O Ze Shanim. This is a little difficult to put this construction together. I'm not sure exactly. You kind of get the sense of what he's trying to say, but how to explain it grammatically, I'm not exactly sure. Very woodenly, he's saying, Has not this David, the servant of Saul, who has been with me all this time, who has been with me this, Yamim would be the plural of Yom, so this days and this years. So he's saying, this David who has been with me all these days and all these years, velo matzativo ma'uma, and I have not found, notice the perfect of matzah there, and I have not found in him anything, ma'uma means nothing at all, so used after a negative here, you would just say anything. I have not found in him nothing, you might say, in worse English, from the day of his nafalling, this is the infinitive construct of nafal with an object suffix, it's a subjective object or subjective genitive pronominal suffix here, his falling. This is usually rendered as his defecting or his deserting when he fell away, in other words, from his own people. Ad hayom hazeh, until the day that this one. So I haven't found anything in him the context would suggest to cause distrust or anything faulty from the day that he came. He's been with me for a long time. He's been okay this far, in other words. Other questions on that? All right. We're actually about out of time here. We want to tackle the next... we better not tackle the next two verses. If we do one, we might as well do both. And we'll just save those for Dr. Selesky. Any questions? We will pick back up then next time, or Tim will, with verse 4. After he gets himself pulled out of his beach chair...